to an episode of Crippled by Culture, where we talk about everything in life and relate it to the disabled and chronically ill community. My name is Sean Dolan, and I'm an author, advocate, and nonverbal public speaker for the disability community. To provide a quick visual description for accessibility, I am a Black man with a white tracheostomy breathing tube in my neck. I'm wearing a white shirt. And the person off camera is who you hear speaking for me. This video is of a Zoom call with me and the person talking for me off camera. And my guest is in the other box next to me. Today, I would like to thank Adam Rose for being my voice in this episode. In this episode, we're talking about the intersections of disability, alternative music, and concepts.
Before we get any further into the interview, I want to give a shout out to our partnering nonprofit festival for the series, Festability. As the media director, I help organize a wonderful event in St. Louis at the Missouri History Museum. We have so many activities and vendors set up all over with an amazing headliner for our main stage each year. It is the best event in St. Louis to celebrate your disability unapologetically while celebrating the Americans with Disabilities Act. Make sure you come out if you're nearby. Check out the link in the description to learn more. Thank you, Festability, for sponsoring the series. Now, back to the show.
Now, let's get to today's amazing guest. At the self-proclaimed, quote, intersection of emo and chronically ill, Valerie is an advocate and content creator passionate about music, inclusivity, and educating others about disability. So Valerie, thank you for being here today. How are you doing?
Thanks so much for having me, Sean. I'm super excited to be here today.
Yes, excited. We're excited to get into this conversation. And would you mind giving a visual description of yourself, please?
Absolutely. So I am a white female in my early 20s. I have kind of long, curly, dark brown hair. I've got on a black floral top and like dark kind of maroon lipstick.
Thank you so much. And to get us into the conversation, firstly, do you identify with having a disability or chronic illness?
I do. So both sort of disabled by chronic illness is how I sort of see it. I have a handful of chronic illness diagnoses, and that's kind of how I started identifying first. And the more and more I really kind of unpacked some of that internalized ableism and really understood what it meant to live with chronic illnesses, is it was when I really found that the disabled identity, not just pen to paper definition, fit me, but really kind of fit me in how I felt and how I identified.
Lovely. Okay. And how does your disability or your disabilities, your chronic illnesses affect your everyday life?
A lot of different ways. It sort of depends on the illness. So for example, I have celiac disease. So that affects every single time I eat anything. I have POTS. That's the one that sort of affects me more so on a continual basis, as a lot of the day is filled with standing and moving and my heart just pumping in any way, shape, or form. Chronic pain is something that I always struggle with. And I have a handful of some other rare conditions as well that really impact my life in terms of just how much medical care they require and how much I sort of have to live with that always sort of being priority number one. So it's definitely varied. It's sort of a full-time job just managing all of them, but I've thankfully figured out somewhat of a balance over the years.
Yeah. And how old were you when you got diagnosed? And I imagine they maybe weren't all at one time. But also I wanted to ask you, do you feel like there are other things going on or not? So kind of a two-part question.
Yeah. So I had my first official diagnosis when I was 15, though I've been sick really since I was in first grade. celiac disease is sort of the culprit that we feel like underlined a lot of things. It's an autoimmune disease for people who don't know, and it tends to bring other autoimmune diseases with it. We're fairly confident that I probably had just undiagnosed celiac disease starting in first grade. I actually got all of my diagnoses pretty much when I was 15, not the best year. I got a slew of 6 diagnoses within an 18-month period. So that was like my junior year and sophomore years of high school. So I thankfully have had a lot of time to adjust since then. I'm 23 now, but it was about all at the same age.
Oh yeah, okay. And with that, you mentioned you're 23, you're quite young, and this has been a journey that you've been on since about 15, 16. And so did you have to go through of your mom internalized ableism throughout the process and along the way? And how has that journey been towards ableism?
Absolutely. I think it took a while for me to realize that I didn't have to be sick enough or disabled enough to accept help. I think I was so used to like holding myself to the frankly, unrealistic standard that able-bodied people even hold themselves to, and was expecting myself to keep up with that, but then was sort of always worried. And I think part of that is because I spent so many years being told by doctors that there was nothing wrong. It was all in my head, and constantly being gaslit and then wondering like, maybe I don't have anything wrong. Maybe I am just making this up for attention and I don't even know that I'm making it up. That when I finally had that validation of like, no, there really was some really serious stuff going on for a long time and we just are figuring this out now. It took a while for my brain to catch up. Like, no, there is a thing going on and therefore you're not unconsciously making this up. So like you do deserve help. And I think another really big part of that is the more that I really connected with the chronic illness and disabled community and learned about like disability justice and so many other concepts that weren't even related to disability, but just like unpacking capitalism and standards of productivity, like all of that, like really like kind of, it seems radical, but really isn't and shouldn't be thought, was so helpful in really unpacking that internalized ableism, because I feel like so much of it is rooted in trying to get yourself to adhere to, like I said, to this already unrealistic standard to begin with. And when you realize that that standard is frankly ridiculous, then it becomes less of, oh, I feel that I need to adhere to this.
Yeah, absolutely. That acceptance is huge, right? And what would you say that is something that stays with you, that you've learned either from disability community, a specific disabled person, or your own experience for disability and products? What's something that you'd love in this disability?
You know, I think I've learned that there are really good people out there. I think it's really easy a lot of times when you are involved in any sort of disability awareness that you're always talking about the things that we need to do better, the things that need to be fixed, because there is a lot of them, do not get me wrong. But when I first sort of got diagnosed with my chronic illnesses, I was in high school, and a lot of high school age kids just don't really have the emotional maturity to be kind to a friend of theirs that may have different needs. And I sort of entered college with like, oh gee, I'm never going to have friends if they know that I have all of these things that I need, if they know that I am chronically ill, if they know I need accommodations. And I very thankfully was proven wrong. It's not necessarily as many people in life as I'd like it to be. I wish it was a greater percentage of the population, but there really are truly kind-hearted people out there that really will have your back. And I think that's something to remember and to focus on sometimes when it can be like this overwhelming, like nobody has our back, that there really are some people that will go to lengths that are mind-boggling just to make me feel included, which is I think something 16-year-old me needed to know.
I have children because that's beautiful, and I'm so glad that you had that experience with friends growing up, because it's just so true that it can be really overwhelming sometimes to think that no one is going to be understanding or be empathetic or have that capacity for those things. And I'm very glad that you were proven wrong on that.
Me too.
And also, just to follow up to the last question, I'm curious as well. Can you talk about just maybe one or two of the standards that you had internalized from society?
Yeah, you know, I think one of the most sort of ridiculous ones, especially in light of COVID, is like attendance policies or work policies or how few days you're given to miss because of illness. And so something, you know, especially in college is when you only get like two absences per semester, people were showing up to class with like the flu. And it's like, well, now you're getting the rest of us sick and then they're going to show up with the flu because they don't feel like they have another option because they only get XYZ days to miss. And instead of thinking, gee, I'm chronically ill, I have health issues a lot, so therefore I can't ever miss class because what if someday down the line I need to miss class more because I have a medical emergency? And instead of thinking that way, I think this is really ridiculous that we're holding ourselves to these standards and we as a society are not allowing more flexibility and understanding that people need to sometimes prioritize their health or their families first. And maybe we should like work on fixing that system instead of me being so concerned about whether or not I can adhere to that system or whether I need accommodations to adhere to that system. I think that's like, again, especially in light of COVID and in the early days of COVID, how many students probably had something like COVID and we're even nowadays have COVID baby and are going to class because they still only get XYZ absences. I think that's one of them. I think another one is how often you're just supposed to stand for things that there's really no reason you have to do that. I even think about like retail jobs, about like cashiers. Like, why could they not just sit down? Like, there's literally no reason they couldn't. So that's, again, one of those things that as somebody with POTS, I can't really stand for long periods of time. I'm always thinking about like, oh my, especially in the light of music, I'm like, how am I going to go to a concert when it's standing room only, when it's this? And couldn't we just build in some space for people don't stand? Which we'll get into later, but it's some of those things that when you really start to wonder why things are the way they are, you realize they don't really make a lot of sense. And so wanting to fit in with them is like, does it matter if I can't stand for 8 hours straight? Like, maybe nobody should be doing that, you know?
Right. Like, what's actually going to happen?
Right. Like,
or, you know, if I have another day of class for whatever reason, like for whatever reason that I need, you know, like, yeah, the blanket, I think, part of what you're getting at there is like those blanket standards that are supposed to just go for everyone, you know, but not only are human beings unique, but disability shows up in infinite ways as well. So Absolutely. The accommodations should also be just as flexible. And all right, so let's have some fun getting into these concepts. When did you discover alternative music?
You know, I feel like it kind of started gradually. If you think about like all of those Radio Disney pop rocky rock stars, you know, like early Jonas Brothers, low-key had some alternative vibes to it. I think that's where I started going down the rabbit hole. And then, you know, when you get on Tumblr and it's 2014, and no matter what side of Tumblr you're on, you are going to hear the words Panic at the Disco. And you're like, what is this that people keep talking about? And then it's like the Holy Grail to like 14-year-old you. And then that was it. I was hooked and I was pulled in and I've never gotten out ever since. Just gone deeper, deeper down the well.
Yes, I love that. And I love you mentioned the Jonas Brothers because I think they introduced a lot of this to that, to a lot of things actually. Yeah, love them. And why would you say that alternative music is your favorite, or at least one of your favorite genres?
Yeah, I really like just like the sound, like sonically, like I just sort of like a lot of the elements that are a part of it. I like that. I feel like there's a little bit more flexibility because it's gotten bigger now, but back in the day, it was sort of like a tiny little niche outcast industry. So I felt like they were less less standards formulated. Like, bands were just writing about whatever the hell they wanted, and it didn't really matter if a record liked it because none of the labels were really that big to begin with. But also just because it's a little bit more of an intimate and accessible scene in some ways, just because concerts are usually smaller, so the price to get in is way less than like big stadium tours. So it was really easy to just kind of go to a ton of local shows that were playing that genre for like $15 or $20 instead of having to duke it out for, you know, like lower bowl, upper bowl, nosebleed tickets for like, you know, big arena or stadium shows.
Yeah, totally. And that makes sense because when you talk about alternative music, it's so undefined and there's so much variety, right? There's so many different ways that someone can go with it because it kind of, would you say it's defined by that lack of having a box to put it in? Is that fair to say?
So. I feel like a lot of times things get classified as alternative when it's not very clearly something that fits in another genre. And then within alternative, there's so many other like boxes that you could get put into. But even then, a lot of the artists that I listen to, I don't even really know how I would describe it if I had to box it. I think I sometimes have to say, well, it's sort of like this band if you mix with this band, but with these elements. So I think I like that. When I say alternative, I could mean anything from like indie to like metalcore. There's just such a big range.
Yeah, so much variety. Yeah, actually, growing up, my favorite was pop music, and now it's R&B. But I think now pop music has no set sound, which is technically how it's supposed to be, because it's short for popular, but 2010, the 2010s pop definitely had a few similar sounds. Yeah, so I guess maybe there might be some overlap between the ideas of pop music and maybe alternative, in that there's like that wiggle room, more so with the alternative music.
And I think a lot of alternative has been influenced by pop. Like, I feel like some of alternative is like, we're not going to do what pop is doing. And then as pop evolves, and in some ways, like, pop has become more alternative. If you think about artists like Billie Eilish, like, she's at the top of the pop, like, I mean, usually she's on the alternative charts, but like, she's in the Billboard, like, top 40. She is in, like, the popular music, even though she's alternative. So I feel like sometimes they're like, whatever you guys are doing, we're going to do the opposite. So I think they kind of play off of each other a little bit. But I also feel like all genres sort of do. And I don't think any one artist is only influenced by artists from one genre either. You know, no like alternative artist is like, I've never listened to hip hop or rap or like any other genre in my life. You know, it's all sort of blends together in a way and balances off of each other.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, to your point, that is probably true for all of the genres, in that they're not super easily defined or separated from one another because there is so much overlap. Like you said, pop music incorporates so much, and over time it has evolved and will continue to evolve. And same exact thing in alternative. Yeah, it's so hard to describe, because I think I get what you're saying. There's just so much shit. Would you say are some of your favorite artists and bands within alternative?
Ooh, it's hard to pick because I feel like it varies a little bit. I'm like a very classic My Chemical Romance girl, so like that's, you know, I gotta rap them. I really like there's a band called Movements. I really like another band called Chase Petra. There's a band that I love. They're newer, but they're called Malivora. Their front person is disabled, and they have a song about disabled rage. And like, that was the first song of theirs I heard. And I was like, new favorite band for the rest of my lifetime. Yes. Like, in the music video, they're like beating up like a, you know, like one of those torsos that they have at the gym that you like fake put. They're beating up with like mobility aids. I'm like, yes.
Yes, I love that. And I was going to ask you if any of your favorite artists or bands are openly disabled. So we love to see mobility aid incorporated in all kinds of performance. Yes, yes. If you were to guess, this might be a hard one, but if you were to guess, how many concerts would you say you've probably been to so far?
Good question. A couple dozen? It's hard to put a number on it. I definitely, before college, was much more spaced out, like one off every now and then. And then in college, I was in Nashville, Tennessee, and I was very grateful that I was in like walking distance to like three sort of alternative venues that are like, you know, really kind of tiny 200 caps. So it was like $7 to get into a show. So I went to a lot more there, as well as some that were happening on campus. So I wish I'm one of those people that I know people like write, have like a concert diary that they can look back at. And I was not smart enough to do that. So I don't have the exact number.
No worries. And yeah, it's hard to pinpoint and set those kinds of things. And of the concerts that you've been to, how would you describe your time of getting accessible taken?
Great question. So a lot of the venues that I go to are standing room only. So there is no accessible ticketing. So sometimes it's sort of just a mute point and it's up to you to call ahead and try to find a manager and try to see what you can get put together. I'm usually, when there is a seat, I'm usually okay to just have a seat because although I am an ambulatory wheelchair user, my biggest thing is like, I use my wheelchair just because I need to sit down. So if I already have a chair, I'm sort of like, okay. And I feel like I don't want to take the very few accessible tickets that there are away from folks that are in actual wheelchairs if all I really need is just to have a chair in the first place. But definitely for shows that there is no accessible seating, period. It's a hit and a miss sometimes with who has an ADA section, how quality and real that ADA section is in the first place. I've been in some ADA sections that was definitely like, this is just a bar stool in a corner. That doesn't really feel like much to me, but I have been in some where it was like, if this was the stage, they sort of carved out like a square here and had like a real barricade up so nobody could like mosh on you. And I was like, okay, great. Like I actually can see the stage and there is like a real chair here. And like, there was clearly intention. So, it definitely depends on the venue. And it's not even so much dependent on like how big or how much money the venue has. I think it's just about how much intention they brought to it. Cause sometimes it's definitely an afterthought. They're like, oh shoot. There was one show that I sat on a trash can. So, you know, like I said, some have more intention than others.
Wow. That is wild. A trash can.
Yeah. Yeah. The trash can felt like really symbolic of just a metaphor for the way accessibility is.
Exactly the way accessibility is, disabled people and chronically ill people are viewed. Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And, you know, on that note, can you tell me who is the band with the disabled person in it? I'm going to write this one down for myself. This is the-
Yeah, it's Malavora. They're based in the UK, which makes me really sad as an American because I know that like they have to get really popular to come over here. But the song that they have that is about disability is called Disorder. There's like a line in there about like gaslighting doctors. Like it's just when you listen to it for the first time, like every single lyric was so validating. And I just was like, yes. Yes, somebody wrote this song and I'm so happy it exists.
Yeah, a song about gaslighting doctors. Very, very, very relatable. Yes, need that. So of your concert experiences, which would you say have been the most memorable? Particularly the ones that are more memorable on the positive end first, but we absolutely want to talk about the full range.
Yeah. Do you mean like from a accessibility standpoint or just in general?
Including accessibility, but not limited to that.
Well, I think in some ways they kind of go hand in hand. You can only have so good of an experience when you're sitting on a trash can. I think one of my best experiences both because of accessibility and just in general, was the last year of Warped Tour. I only started going to Warped when I was like 2015 and it ended in 2018. And so I was like, oh my God, I've missed so many chances. And I was like, I have to make this my like ultimate Warped summer. And I'd never been able, for those who don't know, Warped Tour is like an all day music festival with multiple stages, multiple bands in the middle of the summer, which is the worst possible time ever for somebody with POTS because you're combining standing a lot and heat. Terrible combination. I had never been able to go more than like 2 or 3 hours to a Warped Tour before. I just was like, my body was like, girl, we're done. And knowing that this was my last chance, I was like, I can't do that. Like I have to get the full experience. I have to see all the bands I want to see. And I was like, let me just call the venue and tell them the situation and be like, can you help me like in any way, shape or form? Because Warped themselves has like a ADA wristband that you can get that you on the day of just say that like you need it. And it gets you into like some shaded areas to watch the stages, which is great, but doesn't really sort of like fix everything. And this wonderful woman at this venue was like, if you are nearby and like want to come up, I can give you like a golf cart tour around and I can like show you where the different stages are going to be and the different paths to get there. And we can talk about some of the different things you need. So I went up there. She literally golf carted me around the venue and was like, this is going to be where this stage is. And this is where the bathroom is. And this is the closest way to get from this to this. And this is like the closest path here. And she was willing. And what I ended up doing on the day of the show is I brought like a giant cooler full of like my food for the day and water bottles, and they kept it like in an office for me so I didn't have to carry it on my back the whole time. And so like whenever I needed to go like get another water or get food, I would just, the office was kind of central, I would go in there and she would like unlock it and give me my food. She let me get in the venue like 10 minutes before they opened doors, because the way open doors just means they let the line come in and then it's like a trample, like Lion King full blown trample scene. And I was like, I would like to like get in, but I will die. Like I am not fast. So she let me get in so I could like get to my shaded ADA section without having to like literally like fight to the death for it. And was just like my complete point of contact for the day. Like, let me have a bigger bag. Let me bring my meds in. Like, she literally went like above and beyond, was practically my like personal accessibility escort. It was like, I was so blown away that somebody was willing to do that. And I like wrote her a thank you note, was like teary eyed. And she, I don't think really understood the gravity of like, to her, she was like, it really, I didn't do that much. Like, I let you keep your cooler. But I don't think she really realized like how unbelievable that was. Like I literally felt like I was VIP accessibility because it's never like that. So that definitely made a day that I really wanted to be like the best day ever, because she did everything within like her reason, short of enclosing the entire venue in like AC. She did pretty much like everything in their venue's power to make it as accessible as possible for me. So that was like just like, oh, makes me just like so warm-hearted to think about, you know, like there are people out there. It may not be at every venue, unfortunately, but there are every now and then people out there that even if they don't know everything about accessibility and about what accommodations need to be provided, they're willing to say like, what do you need? And how can we have a conversation to figure out like what would be helpful? You know, like this woman, she like did not know about celiac disease, but I explained like, I need to bring my own food and it needs to be in a cooler because it's 100 degrees out. And she was like, okay, well you can keep the cooler in here. You know, she didn't need to know everything about accessibility to be able to be a human and have empathy and try to work on a situation. So that just felt like such a really good example of like, oh my God, wow, like this, you can really be so accessible and it really doesn't take that much. You just have to kind of think about it for a minute.
Yeah, I love that. I love that. And also, you know, this what with your experience of being, if this person was not so willing to do that, you know, how much would that have put onto you then to make the experience as enjoyable as possible?
Yeah. And I think a big part of it too is like, I have to just bring a lot of things on my person at all times. Like I have a lot of emergency medical equipment. And if I don't have permission to, like if you don't have permission to bring that in somewhere, like I literally cannot come. And so a lot of times when it comes to bag policies and they're like, ladies, you get the little wrist thing that's like this big. I'm like, that's like not gonna fit anything. Okay. Like that's gonna fit a cell phone and maybe $2 and like nothing else. Nice. So sometimes it literally comes down to like, if I don't get permission to bring this in, like I literally do not know how I can come to your event. And sometimes when you can't secure that permission ahead of time, either because like nobody will answer the phone or email, or they're like, oh, I don't know. Then you're like stressed about it on the day of, like, you don't even know if you're going to be let in. And I thankfully have never been like completely denied somewhere, but I've definitely had to like on the day of the show, like they get management down and they have to search my bag and it's a whole thing. And it's like, I like, could we not have just like done this beforehand? Like I tried to call you. I tried to email you. Like I tried to give you the warning, and then they usually try to give you mouth because they're like, you should have told us. And it's like, I tried, believe me, I tried. So, it was so nice to not have to know I could bring everything I needed to bring. I didn't even have to carry everything I needed to bring, which is like another component of it too. And I didn't have to worry on the day of that I was going to have to fight management to prove to them that I really do need to have all of this on me, because that's never fun to do in front of a crowd of people either, that they're just like, you know, looking at you and gawking at you. And it's like, can I not have just emailed you, you know, and you would have, and I could have printed out the email and shown the receipts.
Right. It could be so much simpler if they just listen and work with you beforehand. Absolutely. Yeah, I'm kind of curious what they would have said if you asked them for a free meeting with that day. where the limit would be at 11. So.
Sorry, you muffled out for a minute there, but I don't think there was a question. So I think we're good.
I'm sorry. Yeah, thank you for letting me know that. Thank you for letting me know that, LRP. There was no question.
Okay, perfect.
I was just saying that I would be very curious. I wonder what they would have said if you had asked them for a free meet and greet along with everything. One can dream. But let's talk a little bit about. Right, exactly. So what are some of the experiences? You mentioned the sitting on a trash can and the stool in the corner, which those definitely don't sound like they would be the highlights at all. But can you talk about what are some of the ones that were like, can you talk about those examples or other examples and maybe how you were forced to adapt in these situations and take on that additional labor that they should have really taken care of?
Yeah, I think I try to just sort of prepare myself as best as I can. Like I will do everything in my power to get a hold of the venue and get things pre-approved. But if I can't, I will try to like, I am not above going on Twitter and like keyword searching a venue's name and then putting like disabled after it to see if like any other disabled person has tweeted about it. Half Access is also a really great resource. They have a database of venues with information about their accessibility. So that's like really great when there's already a venue in there. So you can kind of get an understanding of what you're walking into. I definitely, the bag thing is something that I get like flack for a lot when I can't get it pre-approved. And what I've done is I started over the years getting notes from my doctors that basically is like, hi, I'm Dr. So-and-so and Valerie has this condition and I oversee it and period. Just that's literally like a piece of paper that's written by a medical professional that says I have this thing. And since I have multiple conditions, I have like multiple of those letters for per condition and I staple them all together in a big scary looking packet. And when somebody gives me issues about my bag, I pull out my big scary looking packet and I say, these are all my doctor's notes for all of my conditions, which is why I'm bringing this bag and all of this stuff in. And if you want to read them, you can, but here they are. And usually able people get a little scared about that. usually sometimes that it's like, you know, if you have all that, I think I believe you. Which in some ways is like a little bit funny to see him squirm, but I also shouldn't have to do that. Like I shouldn't have to like threaten to disclose all of my private health information just to get accessibility. So it's something that I found is usually effective, although I'm not happy about it. I've also been really lucky that sometimes it's like the people around me at concerts that have really stepped up. I was with a friend once at a show and they literally walked us to the ADA section and I thought they were pulling my leg because the stage was here. So if this is the band, like la la la, I'm the band. And then the ADA section was like literally like back here, like not in a backstage standpoint. And like, this is the wall and the speakers and you can't see anything but the wall and the speakers. And I literally said to the security guard, I was like, how do you see back here? And he was like, this is just the area. So my friend who I was with knew that I was like really upset. And I was like, kept apologizing to her because I was like mortified that like, I was now ruining her concert experience. And she was like, give me a minute. And there, this was like a GA venue. So stage was here, you know, the GA was here. And on each side was like these VIP tables for special people that paid money. And my friend literally, I don't know how she did it, sweet talked somebody into giving us one of those tables. And then we sat in the VIP section, had a great view. So, you know, sometimes it's not the venue, but sometimes it's your friends and your allies who are really going to pull through for you. So we had a great view that night. She was amazing for that, but I appreciated that she was like, in a moment when I was like, not really ready to advocate for myself and was just like, I'm embarrassed and I hate this. She was like, no, I'm fixing it. So, there's methods that can be done, even though like at the end of the day, the moral of the story is venues need to do better. There are some highlights to those kind of bad stories in the sense of I either got to make able-bodied people squirm, or I had my super awesome friend really stick up for me. So I've definitely, like I said, kind of mastered the approach that needs to be taken, but it's a process and it's so individualized per venue too that it's almost like never the same.
Yeah. And it does sound like a lot of work to have to do.
Yeah, it's definitely, there's no such thing as like, I buy a ticket and I show up. It's like all of the pre-preparation that goes into being able to go to a concert as a chronically ill person, and then how much you're going to pay for it from a fatigue and like chronic illness, and this is going to ruin my body's stand for it too. So it's never like just a, like a 2-hour concert. It's like the whole entity of the preparation to go to this concert and survive it.
Yeah, that prep time sounds crucial.
Mm-hmm.
So I did actually have one annoying experience with the concert I went to, but overall it was an amazing time. It happened in July of 2022, and it was me, one of my younger cousins, and one older cousin. So it was a Big Time Rush concert. They're my favorite band of all time, and this is my first time going after wanting to for over a day. And so I couldn't afford the meet and greet tickets, but this band was actually cool to go through the audience. And so they went through the audience anyway, taking pictures of bands and singing. Today, or totally unexpected, but so cool until one of the members would finally come into a section. And they passed us up going into the back of the other thing, going to the back to the other fans where they were. It was ridiculous. Luckily, the people next to us with their disabled son went up to the security, and the band member came back to us specifically and then took pictures. But yeah, that was after they had to go and do that. But I'm going to excuse my cousin for having her big head in the picture. And the moment was completely blocked, unfortunately. So we got the picture back. Not. Not how we would have hoped.
Ridiculous. You hear so many stories about like artists completely forgetting disabled people existing and like yelling at the audience, like, stand up! And like they're yelling at the ADA section. So I feel like it's one of those things that like artists either ignore. They're like, I don't know what that is, so I'm not going over there. Or they like literally just don't know that that's a thing.
I see. 100%. And what would you say people should do if they have problems with inaccessibility once they're there at the concert?
I always say to take it up the food chain as high as you can that night, in a polite way, because as much as sometimes you definitely want to kick and scream, I find that you do get more with honey than vinegar. And even if like respectability politics is, sometimes you have to play what you got to do to get your needs met. So as much as you kind of can to upper management and explaining like what your needs are and coming up with solutions that you at least think they could do. So for example, if you're someplace and they don't have an ADA section, and I'm like, you have a bar though, so you have chairs. So can we put a chair somewhere? If you name tangible things that you know that they could do, again, based off of like their resources and their size, it's very hard for them to say no when it's like, well, there's a chair right there. So literally what is stopping you from picking it up and moving it and putting it in an eight? Like it's very hard for them to, how can they really? So as much as you can be specific, or like I said, have like documentation or something that supports, especially if you're bringing something in that is at risk for them not allowing in, as much as you can do to have the support, as well as people with you. Like if you're with people, have them back you up or hype you up or like second what you're saying, because sometimes having a whole group kind of saying like hello does a lot more than just one person. So even if it takes like saying to the people next to you, like, can you guys just back me up on this? I know you don't know me, but like, can you help a girl out? I've definitely seen like that solidarity make things happen when it's not just one person. It's like sort of the whole audience, sort of the same way that like if somebody, you know, needs a minute, like in a concert, it gets stopped because somebody passed out or like needs a minute. It takes like not just one person in the crowd being like, excuse me. Like it takes multiple people being like, hello, we have something that needs fixing here.
And on the other end, you know, if we were sitting at a table full of concert venue managers and owners, this is, I mean, probably hard to give a blanket advice, but what is something that venues could do or keep in mind to make concerts more accessible?
Yeah, I think one thing I hear from venues a lot is like, oh, sorry, we don't know how to handle this. You're like the first disabled person we've had. And it's like, number one, I'm not. There's literally no way unless we were built yesterday. And number two, have you ever considered that maybe the reason you aren't seeing a lot of disabled people or hearing from disabled people at your shows is they're not coming because there's nothing that is being done for them? Like maybe I feel like they're kind of quick to throw up the like, well, that's not a need here. And it's like, well, have you considered that you don't see those people because you have done nothing? So I think that's one part of it too. And I think another is everyone deserves to be able to enjoy live music. And a lot of the things that people are asking for are not unreasonable. I think a lot of times venues sort of want to just be like, well, we can't bulldoze the building, so sorry. And it's like, you don't have to have an all or nothing attitude. Like, even if you can't make this the world's most super deluxe, ultra mega accessible venue, like there are some things you can do to make it better, and better is better than nothing. So even as small as like, okay, I'm not saying you have to completely redo your floor plan, but like, let's find a decent area to put some chairs and let's put like a singular barricade just so that people are not like literally moshing on top of them. Like, why don't we put some information on our website so that people don't have to hunt us down? A lot of websites will have like FAQ and you click on the accessibility one and it's like, call us. And it's like, that, great. Nobody answers your phone. So I don't even know what baseline I'm walking into. Like, you could at the very least be like, our venue has two stairs, or we do not have, or we do have, like, just bare bones basic, let us know, because that may right there be all we need to know. Have just some very basic training for your staff about not everybody who has a disability is visibly disabled, and some people may not, you know, do not harass somebody if they're sitting in the ADA section but you think they don't quote look disabled, or having a blanket exception to certain policies if there's a medical need. Like there's so many little things like that that don't take big infrastructure or money or anything other than just some thought into it that could literally be implemented like tomorrow. So I think it's just like, don't just use the cop out of nobody needs it or we can't perfect it. That's not an excuse to not make it better.
Right. Yeah, absolutely. Trying and actually doing something and actually trying to communicate with concert goers at the very least, absolutely. And how would you say ticket websites like Ticketmaster and Live Nation at that level, how can they improve in accessible shows or accommodation?
So you can see it on my face. They could do literally anything else and it would be an improvement. So for those of you who don't know, it depends on what ticket website you're using. But if you want to get accessible tickets, 9 times out of 10, you can't get them through like an artist presale. So if you get into an artist presale, you can't even get the ticket you need. A lot of times they're like just randomly given away to other people who don't need them. You saw this a lot with Taylor Swift Eras Tour. People bought a ticket and then they were like, wait a minute, this is an accessible ticket. It didn't tell me that I wouldn't have bought it if it was an accessible ticket. You just have to, and then sometimes you have to like call the venue to get it, or you have to enter a special code, or it's sort of like the most ridiculously convoluted. You have to jump through 37 hoops. And in this day and age, it's already really hard to get a ticket in general. Like again, Taylor Swift, like people are literally going to war to get these codes. So anything other than the current system of like you have to jump through 32 hoops and answer my riddle and find the buried treasure to get the access to the accessibility tickets would work. And I think the biggest argument is like people will just buy those tickets if they're open to everybody. And like I get it, but like there's also other things you could do. Whether it's having a specific sign-up form or whether it's having like a specific pre-sale code that has an additional thing that you could, let's get creative, folks. There's better ways to do it than to make it a treasure hunt. And I think too, like maybe it's something like getting your account on Ticketmaster validated as like you've spoken with somebody, you know, like Disney has a way to go with their accessibility, but like the way it works at Disney is you talk with the cast member, you explain to them what your needs are, and they will be like, okay, yes, this we can give you this disability access thing. So maybe my account in Ticketmaster is marked as, yo, I've talked to somebody once and they know I'm a wheelchair user. So now because my account has that linking, I have the ability to buy these tickets. And that would be easier because that would be a one-time thing that then for the rest of your life, you could buy tickets in the accessible area without having to like redo a new process. So I just feel like there's so much more or better that could be done. Or frankly, there's more accessible seats to begin with, because that's also half the battle is, you know, as much as people are fighting for tickets in general, we're fighting for an even smaller percentage of tickets. You know, we're not fighting for one of the 50,000 tickets in Taylor Swift's stadium. We're fighting for like one of 100. If that,
right.
If we're lucky. So, you know, there's also that too. And then probably people would not feel the need to take them if, you know, it wasn't such like a hot commodity. They'd be like, well, that's the disabled section. And there's clearly a lot of people that need it. So I'll just go. I mean, and also of course, if people actually just were a little bit more empathetic and didn't take things that they knew were not theirs, there's also that too. But that's that. I don't know if Ticketmaster can control that one. So,
right. Yeah, that was my argument, that just anyone would buy it. And technically, like you said, on Ticketmaster, there is no venue to buy accessible tickets. But to your point, if they tried, they might be able to find some creative ways to minimize that, mm-hmm. while still making things more accessible to people. I wish there was a way for the accessible seats to be, you know, so that no one that's non-disabled could purchase, So if they had cheaper VIP tickets specifically for the disabled fan, I don't know. Do you think, yeah, well, let's shift over to this. Have you ever gotten to do a meet and greet? Because I have not yet, but have you gotten to?
I have, but with artists that are not big enough to have that expensive of a meet and greet, if that makes sense, which again is the nice thing about alternative music, because I have gone to meet and greets where I got a combined ticket to the show and a meet and greet for like $70, which is usually what you would pay to see like an artist in an arena show if you were in like the nosebleeds. So I'm thankful that I have. They're also, I think, a little bit less, well, backing it up. When these were happening, I was like 16. So everything was like, oh my God. But I think the general sort of flow of meet and greets when they're in the alternative music scene is a little bit more laid back. Like a lot of times it's sort of like, you're with us for our sound check and we ask some questions and like, yeah, then we like go take a picture. And, but it's sort of more of like pre-show hangout vibe. So it feels less of like, it's my turn to like walk up to Taylor Swift and take a picture with her. And oh my God, which I really like the format of more. The other thing too, is like in alternative music, a lot of times bands just come out after the show and like hang out at their merch tables. So you don't even really have to pay for a meet and greet because they're like, you're just going to see them again, which is why I think the alternative music scene really appealed to me because it's so easy to like connect with the actual artists themselves. Most of my favorite bands I've met not because I paid for a meet and greet. I've met because I waited like 20 minutes after the show and then they were like, hey, what's up? We're here. Do you want us to sign anything? I guess. I don't know. Are we relevant enough for that? So I would say my ultimate dream, I always wanted to be invited to like the Taylor Swift, either the secret session or like whatever the backstage room, like either the rep room or the tea party or the red room, like always wanted one of those. Given her current level of popularity, that's never happening because it did not happen when she was like Red era, Speak Now era. Like it didn't happen for me then, so it's not going to happen now. Right. But that is the one artist I would 100% in any scenario, relaxed or not, totally lose my absolute cool over.
Why do you think that most artists or this don't reach mainstream? I mean, of course, systemic ableism, but do you have any thoughts toward that?
I think there's so much money involved in actually reaching the mainstream. Not just like you have to have the money to promote yourself. You have to have the money to either not work a job and focus full time on your music, or you have to be able to physically be able to work a job and still do promoting your music. So like you have to just have the financials to even cover like making the music and having the equipment and all those things in the first place. But when you think about big artists, like touring is a really big part of that. And touring in a way that's accessible is also really expensive. Most artists in the alternative music scene don't tour in tour buses. They tour in like a white van, basically. And they just sleep in the van and they eat Taco Bell for like 30 days in a row. And they just live like that. For most disabled people I know, like, I know I couldn't do that. Like every night I'm like, I need to have a sterile environment where I can like disinfect, like, and I've set out all my medications and I just like physically could not do that. Even with celiac disease, like how would I feed myself on this tour? All of that takes money. And then what if I have a medical emergency and I don't have a doctor in the city? Like there's so many different considerations that could be made accessible, but they just require money. And when you think about most of us are already struggling with medical costs, like being a disabled person is not cheap. You know what I mean? Like it comes with a very nice big ass luxury price tag and then no luxury. So when you think of the just access to resources and financials, it requires to be a prominent mainstream artist, coupled with all of the things that already come with being disabled and the things that means that we have to afford, it's difficult. It really is. And of course, ableism is a very big part of that. But, you know, the same way that there's always conversations about like, do you disclose your disability in a job interview? I would not be surprised if there's disabled artists that are getting looked over by record labels that are thinking, well, what if they have a medical issue? Or what if they this? And then what if they have to take a break? I'm sure that is a part of it too, of this, again, this notion or this stigma that, like, one, we're just so fragile that we're going to fall apart and not be able to do anything. Or two, not wanting to even consider that, like, maybe people are human beings and, like, may need to be afforded a break every now and then.
You know,
I wish that's not how it was, but.
Yeah. Why is it important thing for artists to start catering to and thinking about their disabled patrons more?
There's the answer I want artists to have, and then there's the answer I think they're going to listen to. The answer I want artists to have is, like, you should just care about all of your fans of all kinds and whatever those needs may be, whether it's disabled fans and access needs, or whether it's, like, transit gender fans and the fact that, like, what if the venue doesn't have a gender neutral bathroom, or, like, make sure that they feel comfortable using, like there's just different things that your fans may need that you should care about because they're your fans. I don't know if that's really a compelling argument, unfortunately. So the argument that I think is, like, the correct argument that we'll get through to them is, we want to support you. And if you make it possible to support you, we will give you our money. And that is what you want. I use that argument a lot for bringing back live streaming. Every artist in the universe proved that they could do a live stream concert during COVID. And then everyone just collectively decided that they were never going to do it again. And it was like, okay, but wait a minute. You know how to do it. And I'm not saying you can't tour. What I'm saying is, if you just live streamed, like, one of those shows and it was, like, a low cost entry, 10, 20 bucks, you could make a ton of money. Like, that's not just disabled fans who maybe couldn't attend the show. That's everybody whose city you're not going to. That's people who maybe don't have transportation or they don't have childcare. Like, there's so many different people that maybe just can't come to your show that would throw $20 at your face so quickly if you just did this once. And it doesn't even need to be that good of a setup, because I personally live streamed, among with 15,000 other people, the My Chemical Romance return concert that this fan was doing just on their own phone that probably had, like, 3 pixels of quality. It was the most sketchy, shoddy quality live stream. And I sat there and I watched it for 3 hours with 15,000 other people. I would have paid 20 bucks for that. And that was terrible quality. Like, set up a laptop in the back, dude, and do it on Facebook Live. I'm not even saying it has to be that good. Like, people, even, like, right now, like, Taylor Swift, people are tuning in for the surprise songs every night through, like, random people streaming it on TikTok. Like, it doesn't even have to be a professional setup. I'm not even saying you have to invest that much in it. So if you won't do it because it is a nice thing to do to include your fans who, whether it's disability or a ton of other reasons, can't come to your shows, do it for the money, because at the very least we can come if you're doing it for the money, because you're doing it.
Absolutely. Yeah. There's the PR reason, and then there's the business reason. Both of those are important. And have you ever been noticed or followed or communicated with by one of your favorite influencers or celebrities?
Yes. I had a very interesting period of my life when I was a teenager, where I was, like, really, really, really into this boy band. And then one of the members that was my favorite member of this boy band left the boy band to go back to his old, like, pop punkish sort of band. And I was hardcore on Tumblr for this guy and got noticed to the point where, like, I would actually talk with him every now and then. I went to a few of his shows. Fever Dream, very Wattpad time of my life that is so strange looking back on now. More recently, I actually make a lot of content on TikTok about, like, this music genre in general. And, like, every now and then I do see, like, band members in my comments or following and like. And I think I've come to the point where I've, like, grown enough to sort of, like, drop that idolization. Again, if it was Taylor Swift in the comments, a little different. But for a lot of these bands, it's like, I've been to your show a few times. I've maybe talked to you after the show. So it feels, it still is like, oh, hello there. But it feels less of like, oh my God, so-and-so. I think probably the best way to describe it is, it's like, it's sort of like if you were talking about somebody and you didn't think they were there. Not that you were talking bad, but, like, you just didn't think they were there. And then you turn around and you're like, oh, hi. That's kind of how I feel about it nowadays. It's like, oh, you're here. Hi, I guess. Welcome in. Hello.
Right. Yeah. And how would you say that artists, celebrities can cater specifically towards the disabled community so that we can feel?
Yeah, I think, again, similar to the way that venue owners like to use the all or nothing excuse, artists, I'm not like saying you have to fix inequality, but even just doing things, I've seen some bands be like, hey, if you're ever at one of our shows and there is no ADA section, find somebody on our team and we'll figure out a place for you to sit. Like, I'm not saying it'll be ideal, but like, we'll put you behind on the side stage, or like, we'll figure something out within the best of our ability. Like, that sort of allyship, even if it's recognition that like, you maybe cannot control that the venue that you're playing in is not super accessible, especially for artists that don't have that much bargaining power. Like, you may not be able to demand certain things of certain venues. Like, you may just have to take where you can play. But even, you know, I've seen some artists do things like they code their shows, light code them. So if any fans are epileptic or have other light sensitivities, like, they've either gotten it approved to be like epileptic safe, or they're like, hey, during these songs, like, there's little things that you can do that are make your concerts and just your, for lack of a better word, fandom more welcoming, that, again, don't have to be life-changing, policy dismantling. It's really just about thinking about what are some needs that your fans may have, and what do I have in my power to do about that? Again, whether that's putting it in your rider as sort of like a demand for, if I'm playing this concert at this venue, I need you to guarantee that you are going to have an ADA section, or whether that's just, again, like taking things into your own hands. Even as simple as, you know, do you have ASL interpreters at your shows? Do you have captions on your social media content? Like, there's so many different things that aren't that hard to do, but would really mean a lot to people. You know, I know, again, like, as a disabled fan, it's sort of not the best example now considering the way things have played out, but then in the beginning of COVID, when everybody was taking like things seriously, it was really heartwarming to see so many of my favorite bands post and tweet like, protect the vulnerable, wear a mask. Like, it made me feel like you're doing things that show me that like, I am welcome here and that you respect me as part of your community. And I think that feeling really can go a long way. And people who don't really have things that they need, or they just kind of already feel like they have that inclusion. It's sort of like, if you're a fan and you're not disabled, like, you're just, of course, already in that space. Of course you're welcome. But for disabled fans, that's not always a given. And so knowing explicitly that even if it's not perfect, there have been like genuine good-hearted attempts to welcome you, I think that really, really means a lot. And isn't something that you forget quickly either. Like, I think a lot of the bands that I've really sort of attached myself to, in terms of like, have really meant a lot to me over the years, are bands that have done something that has made me feel like you genuinely care about the people and are trying to do what's best, to really make your fans feel safe, welcome, included.
But was there anything that we didn't discuss today that we wanted to discuss, that we maybe didn't get to touch on?
You know, I think that's a lot of it. I mean, I could talk about this for hours. I have a very big soapbox and I am not afraid to get on it. But for everybody's sake, I do think we've covered a lot of ground. I think if I want to sort of like leave any two plugs, I would say to check out Half Access. I'm actually on their board, but they're doing great work. Like I mentioned, they are a nonprofit dedicated to making live music accessible. They collect information from different venues, so that disabled fans can go and search, you know, is this venue, you know, anything from how wide the doorways are to like if there's stairs to what their bag policy is. So that's definitely something that is a resource for disabled people to use, and just for people in general, submit your venue's information. Like, that's great information for us to be able to have access to. And we've already mentioned them like twice now here, but go check out Malavora, go listen to that song about disabled rage and feel empowered. And like, you're going to go beat up your doctor. I don't keep on beating up doctors, but gaslighting ones, maybe.
You know, I think there's a case for that. Or she. And I swear I wanted to go to two different virtual concerts and even buy the fucking VIP tickets if needed. But tell me why the app didn't have a chat box during the meet and greet.
The what?
The chat box during the meet and greet, or the app for the virtual concert didn't have a chat box. So there was no way to actually communicate with them during the meet and greet.
That's so... See, that's when you can tell that these things have not been thought through whatsoever. At all. It's like, come on, guys, like, literally there's platforms that you don't even need to, like, go on Twitch or Facebook Live. Like, it's not, like, there's places that already do that, like, that you could just do. You don't have to reinvent the wheel.
Absolutely. And we will end it there. But thank you so much, Melanie, for coming on and having this conversation with me. I hope you've enjoyed this as much as I did. And I appreciate the insights that you provided as well. And if people wanted to connect with you, thank you so much once again. And I hope you enjoyed it. And if people wanted to connect with you and support the work that you do, where can they do so?
Yeah, well, I mean, thank you so much for having me. I love getting to talk about this stuff. So thank you for giving me a space to just like word vomit my passion. Easiest place to find me is probably on TikTok. I'm at Valerie's Voice, just spelled like my name. That is the easy way to find all of my links to like all of the other parts of the internet that I lurk on, if that's not necessarily your speed. I also have an email if that's easiest way to contact me. It's iamvaleriesvoice@gmail.com. I'm always happy to answer questions about like, help, I'm going to this concert and what do I do? I may not be able to like build the perfect solution for you, but I can at least kind of brainstorm with you like how we can figure out what to do about it. So I always, like I said, really love talking about this topic and just working with people and thinking about how we can just make this space better. Because there's a lot to be done, but there's a lot that is going right and people that are good that are attempting to do good. So
I love that. And I'll make sure to share everything in the description below. And once again, I'm Sean Gold. Thank you for watching. Make sure you all like, comment, all your thoughts, and subscribe. Also, make sure the bell is to be notified of each upload. I'll see you all next time on another episode of Crippled by Culture.
Want to listen to Crippled by Culture on your favorite podcast platform? Well, now you can. Crippled by Culture is now available wherever you listen to podcasts. Just search up the show title and make sure you subscribe. Thank you for being a listener.